North Idaho News of the Week is brought to you in part by Evergreen Realty, commercial and residential property listings. Online at evergreen-realty.com. Good morning. You've tuned into North Idaho News of the Week on Friday, August 14th. I'm Jack Peterson. I'm here with Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty well.
Breathing better.
Because the air
is much better.
I'd say so, yeah. Yeah, I just looked up the air quality. Actually, it is much, much better compared to earlier this week and even compared to yesterday. And we're also here in the studio with Sansare Mitchell, senior writer for the Sandpoint Reader. Hi, Sansare.
Hello.
Thanks for being here on this, right now, clear or fair morning, according to the air quality index. Let's start right there. Why not? The current air quality here in Sandpoint, Idaho, is for the first time in, I think, quite a while, is now at fair, and the number, for those of you who follow the AQI number, is down to 25. And I don't think it's been there for several weeks, probably.
And AQI means air quality index.
There we go. It's forecast to remain kind of in that fair or poor category for the weekend. But not rising above the AQI, at least not rising above 100 over the next couple days. So a little better than we had during the past week, where that number was in the hundreds or 200s even. That is, of course, all related to wildfires in our area. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But some important and relatively late-breaking state news. In a ruling issued just yesterday, an Idaho judge has ruled that a pregnant woman may receive abortions in cases if there are serious risks to her health or if there's a high risk she will harm herself. The decision, again, released just Thursday, is a major change to the Idaho abortion ban's exemptions. The judge determined the U.S. constitutional protections under the Due Process and Equal Protection Clauses of the 14th Amendment, quote, establish a narrow but fundamental right to abortion when a pregnancy threatens the woman's life or health, unquote. The ruling was issued by U.S. District Court of Idaho B. Lynn Windmill, and the 81-page decision blocked the Idaho Attorney General or Ada County Prosecutor from enforcing Idaho's criminal laws that prohibit providing abortions in narrow cases to protect the mother's health. In part of that 81-page decision, he wrote, by banning health-preserving abortion, Idaho attempts to deny this fundamental right on the basis that the threat of harm comes from a fetus, which depends on the woman for survival. But a pregnant woman's health is not a state resource to be allocated at the legislature's whim. The 14th Amendment exists precisely to prevent subjugation like this. Under his ruling, pregnant mothers who receive a diagnosis that their fetus is unlikely to survive to term or unlikely to survive long after birth may only receive an abortion if that diagnosis also puts the mother's health at risk. Women who receive a life-limiting fetal diagnosis that does not threaten their health are still prohibited from receiving an abortion in Idaho. An abortion would also still not be allowed in cases where there is a diagnosis of a significant disability, he wrote in that ruling. That is a major change from the law that existed up until yesterday, or that stood until yesterday. And sure to be responded to in the media and by both sides of the both the plaintiff and the other guys. Yeah, the defendant. Talking a little bit more about those fires, moving back up here to North Idaho. The air quality, as I mentioned, is fair. You wouldn't know it by my voice. I don't think I can hear it right now. It's still lingering for me, but the wildfires in our area are currently the big ones, remain that Porcupine fire. It is, currently, let's see, where's my listing of percentage contained? It is the 110 acre Porcupine fire is 0% contained. Aviation support and monitoring continue to be the main main course of action to keep fire growth minimal. Bucket drops have kept the fire from crossing the ridgeline and kept the fire on the side of the ridge where it originated. People who live and recreate in the area, which is in the eastern part of Bonner County, should remain aware of the incident and the potential for changing conditions. And updates will continue to occur, but it, even though it is not, as they say, 0% contained, but they are just monitoring it, and it seems like they're not, planning to take, it doesn't look like it's going to cross the ridgeline. The other one up north that's affecting us is the Upper Smith Creek fire. As far as the smoke, let's see, that's currently at 35% contained, and that is in the near the Canadian border in the upper part of Boundary County,
pushing 3,700 acres now. It's burning actually across the lower part of Long Canyon. Which is a real shame. Hopefully it doesn't continue up Long Canyon.
Yeah.
We do have a couple of small fires that popped up just in the last day. One is near a little north of Chimney Rock. It's called the Zuni Fire. It's at half an acre. And then there's one that's east of Bonner's Ferry. It's called the Debt Fire. It's 0.2 acres. And there's one called the Bear Fire. It's just 0.1 acres, and it's by Priest Lake, a little bit east of the East Shore Road. So it's concerning because when we still have these winds happening, of course, those could get turned into large fires pretty quickly.
It is quite breezy out there today. I think that forecast is, it's becoming calm, but not until tomorrow. It looks like this wind is going to keep up all day. These fires have a possibility of spreading, and that would create serious impacts. Let's take a look to the west, to the friendly town of Priest River, where Sansary Mitchell writes in this week's Reader that the Merritt Bridge, which is I believe it's the only river crossing, the only crossing of the Pendere River in between the Long Bridge and the bridge into Washington State, is the Merritt Bridge in Priest River, and there have been structural faults found. Let's talk about that for a minute before we dive into the big story, which is about, I think, the Lake Pendere High School's or the Lake Pendere School District's response to the LPOHS coalition, which we'll get into in just a minute. But tell us a little bit about what's going on with the Merritt Bridge. I thought it was kind of interesting that they the cause of the damage, as of the time you wrote this, at least, unknown, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So what does it mean that the Merritt Bridge is damaged, and do you know what the impact of that is going to be on local traffic?
So the impact as of yet is unknown because they're still waiting on an engineering report. The issue is that the most severe portion of the damage is underwater. So just to back up a little, Merritt Bridge is the longest bridge in Bonner County that is maintained by Bonner County Road and Bridge. So it's the longest bridge that our local government has control over and has to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
And they go out and do inspections on it once a year, or every other year, rather. And then they hire a team out of Boise with the help of the Idaho Transportation Department to scuba dive down there and examine the pilings. And so they do that every 5 years. And they were aware, because of their regular overwater inspections, that there was some cracking in one of the piles that keeps the bridge up. And so they submitted for a grant application, which they won, and they're in the designing phase. And essentially, by 2027, they're going to wrap all of the pilings to secure the bridge and make sure it lasts for another decade or longer. They don't know. Or at least I don't know if they know. And so as they were going ahead with this, they have the underwater inspection and they discover that one of the piles has been completely cut in half, essentially 6 inches above the bottom of the riverbed. And they said it could have been structural defects. It could have been impacted. They're not sure. And the cause, because it's just one pile, isn't that important. If it was multiple piles, then that would be concerning. But that is something that they need to fix right away. So currently they have weight restrictions on the bridge, which only really impact the drivers coming to and from the mill on the other side, on the Duford side of the river. And so they've worked with the mill employees to kind of balance out the bridge when drivers are going over it so that they're not putting a lot of pressure on the piling that is not touching the ground.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they plan to dive under there, again with the help of the Boise-based engineers, and weld a collar essentially around the footing, digging about 4 feet down into the mud. And then once that's in place, they're going to fill it with concrete to get all of the water out and produce a more stable footing for that pile. So that will bring the bridge, in conjunction with the 2027 improvements, will bring the bridge up to normal operations. There won't be any weight restrictions aside from what are mandatory for any bridge. But currently, they're waiting to see if they do need to actually close the bridge down. They are monitoring. They're going out once a day to make sure that the cracks aren't spreading, that nothing looks wonky on the bridge, and they are still letting drivers go to and from. But they should know by early next week if they are going to have to actually close the bridge.
Are they letting loaded log trucks go across right now?
They are. Yeah. As long as they've worked it out so when two trucks are going over, they're a certain distance apart so that they're kind of balancing the weight on both sides of the bridge, not in the middle. And once they do find out whether or not they just need to input stricter weight restrictions or if they need to close the bridge, then it's going to be, it was about 2 weeks from Tuesday that the parts were supposed to get in to fix the bridge. And then once those parts get in and they know everything, it's going to be 2 weeks to repair it. So there's the potential at this point that the bridge could be closed for 3 weeks, but they don't know anything yet.
I mean, I guess so. The dive team goes out every 5 years, and obviously this damage happened then within the last 5 years.
Yes.
I guess they didn't notice it then. I imagine you kind of hope that it was an impact rather than, you know, than just wear and tear degradation, because if this was just a natural occurrence, then that could affect all the other pilings as time goes by.
Yes, and the pilings they're both in the same quadrant of the bridge, so they're in relatively the same place.
Mm-hmm.
But it seemingly a pretty unique circumstance to have a pile shorn completely
very
through.
Close to the riverbed, you said.
Yeah.
So what would have been down there that could have caused that?
Indeed. Yeah, one of those submarines. Or, I mean, yeah, I guess who knows? I mean, the river's low in the winter and even, you know, floating ice or something. I don't know. I'm speculating here. But, anyway, a major impact to residents of Priest River anyway for at least the next, 4 weeks? And maybe that's it.
Yeah, the way around, they'll have to take Old Priest River Road over to Highway 41 and then up to Newport and cross on the the bridge there. And that would add, if you're on the south side of the river and you're trying to get to Priest River, that'd probably add another 15 miles to your drive.
Right. Yeah, it's those people. I mean, I guess the bridge isn't closed yet, but yeah, if they do close it, for those people who live in that vicinity on the south side and your nearest grocery store amenities
and
of any kind.
Yep.
That'll be quite an impact. Let's talk a little bit about education news. Let's talk Lake Pendere School District and the ongoing the ongoing drama with the Lake Pendere High School Coalition, I guess. You start your article with a very nice kind of summary of the events so far, mainly the events that mainly took place in July. I think the grievance was filed maybe at the very tail end of June, and then the meeting that took place on July 11th, which was very well attended and resulted in a vote by the school board to basically continue with their plan that already stood to close Lake Pendere High School at the end of the 2027. Not this upcoming, it's not closed now. It will be open all of next year for the school year and then closed at that time in its current location at the old Lincoln High School on Boyer, or the old Lincoln School on Boyer. That all happened in July. The announcement, I guess it goes back even further. The announcement goes back, I think, to March, maybe when the school district first announced that they were planning to close that facility and move the students within it to, or those students that still remain within the Lake Pendere High School system to the portables behind the middle school. They're called the portables. They're kind of mobile homes, mobile structures. I don't think they're still on wheels, but so they're not really truly portable, but they were, they're manufactured buildings that are behind the middle school. And the Lake Pendere High School Coalition, in addition to just asking, basically that they reverse this decision, came forward with like a 31-page grievance that detailed a number of accusations against the school district. And your article is, I guess, mainly about the response to those accusations. You want to tell us, I guess, a little bit about how this August 11th meeting went? I mean, first of all, was it as well attended as the one in July? Or is it?
It was not. So the one in July, when they actually voted to close down the current location, the current facilities, and move the alternative high school to behind the Sandpoint Middle School, that meeting was entirely full. And it's a pretty big meeting room that the school board uses. And actually, people were being turned away at the door. People were standing. People were sitting on the floor. And eventually the room reached maximum legal capacity for fire safety, and so they had to turn people away. But this time, there was essentially no one who didn't work for the school district at the meeting. There was no public comments or anything like that. And the meeting overall went along just as planned. They did their regular reports, and all the counselors came up and they wore little superhero capes, and it was very, very cute. And then they got into, you know, all of this business, which is obviously very emotional. And the superintendent, Dr. Becky Meyer, started out her presentation by saying, you know, I'm going to be really blunt here because there have been all of these accusations. We've been reported to the government, and the truth just needs to get out there. So essentially, when the coalition didn't go through the regular grievance process with the school district where they sit down and they talk through everything and they submit paperwork. Instead, they sent this 31-page grievance, and then they reported the school district to the Idaho Department of Education, to the Attorney General's office, to the Bonner County prosecutors, alleging open meeting law violations, alleging misuse of funds, graduation rate fraud, attendance fraud to get more funding from the state. And essentially, Dr. Meyer's presentation was going over the responses from all of these higher authorities that the school district was reported to. And all of those higher authorities found that nothing is remiss, that they hadn't violated any laws. So to go sort of play by play, the first allegation was essentially that the school board kept violating Idaho open meeting law by attempting to hide big decisions about Lake Pendre High School and about hiring and firing employees in bulk consent agenda items. And their point in that was that if you put a whole bunch of things into one vote and it just says consent agenda, then people don't really look at it, so you avoid public scrutiny. And as Dr. Meyer reported, one, you can absolutely use consent agenda items. Mm-hmm. That's really not a question.
Mm-hmm.
But also some of the things that they said they hid in consent agenda items, the school district actually had their clerk go back and pull all of those agendas, mm-hmm. and they were not in the consent agenda. They were full action items that could have been discussed and were listed individually. And then they also, a lot of the argument hinged on the idea that, according to the coalition, if you move the Lake Pendre High School students to the same general area as the Sandpoint High School, then you are combining the two and you are demoting them from a separate high school to a program. And what comes with that is a funding cut.
Mm.
And so they in the initial grievance, kept referencing these separate site mandates in Idaho code. And of course, if you go back and look at the Idaho code that they are citing underneath that, it does not mention separate site mandates at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Dr. Meyer went through it and then had the school district's legal counsel go through code and try and find anywhere that that it says that there needs to be really separate campuses. And there isn't anywhere in code that does say that. In fact, a lot of schools around the state do sort of co-locate their alternative high school and their regular quote-unquote high school. Because, you know, you just don't have enough money. And famously in the state of Idaho, we don't really fund education very well.
Mm-hmm.
And they can share resources.
They can share resources. And also, I mean, if the school district owns a big plot of land, you want to get the most out of it and use it as best you can. So they are, to their credit, they are having a separate campus. It's just right next door. So it's similar to how the high school and the middle school are right next to each other, but they are separate campuses.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The new campus would be right behind the middle school, mm-hmm. actually. Yeah, and there are portables there, but there's also one, you know, regular building where they used to have the driver's ed program.
Yes, and they're doing a lot of renovations. They're putting in all new bathrooms and plumbing and AC and things like that, and fixing up the portables. And this next year, they're going to work with the returning students. So currently, there's 51 students enrolled for next year to see what they want as far as outdoor space. Because, of course, at their current campus, they have this big greenhouse, and they have gardens in the back, and lots of area to run around. And so I know there was talk of sort of an outdoor classroom, garden space. Somebody mentioned pickleball courts. I don't think that's really what the kids are into, but
their parents can come play pickleball. Our grandparents.
And so the one there were a couple points that the coalition made that the school district made some concessions to. So one was that they drew on designated differences, which are mandated by Idaho Code and IDAPA. And so essentially that means that if you have at-risk students, in order to get at-risk funding for those at-risk students, you have to treat them a little bit differently than you would treat any other student. You have to have smaller class sizes. You have to have education that's more tailored to them. Oftentimes that can involve more hands-on work, more workforce preparedness. And so the coalition said they're not going to have these designated differences if they're just going to Sandpoint High School for their electives. And the Idaho Department of Education said that as long as 50% of their classes are at LPOHS, then it's completely fine for them to take electives at a different school. And as Dr. Meyer said, it's the job of teachers to tailor their teaching style to each student. And that can be very difficult, obviously, in a large classroom. But they do work with students individually and class by class to make sure that everybody is learning to the best of their ability. So she kind of argued that you have designated differences just generally. And, of course, she drew from the fact that there are at-risk students in the conventional system. There are at-risk students at Sandpoint High School and K through 12 generally that are not at LPOHS. So there was that. They also drew from the fact that their attendance is audited every year. Their funds are audited. One of the issues that the coalition brought up is they don't like the use of Flex Fridays, which are essentially if you're above a C student on some Fridays on the calendar year, you can choose to work remotely. And the coalition alleged that students who don't show up on Fridays are just automatically marked as present and working from home. And the school district had said, no, if the student isn't in touch with their teacher for each class, then they are marked as absent. It doesn't matter if they show up or not. They also alleged that the school district would transfer failing students from Sandpoint High School right before graduation to LPOHS, so that they would either flunk out or repeat a grade there and not affect Sandpoint High School's graduation rate. As Dr. Meyer pointed out, you can't just transfer kids from one school to another, specifically to LPOHS, because they have to qualify under state regulation as at-risk students. And what that means is they have to fit multiple criteria that could be they have documented substance abuse issues. You know, they've had legal troubles. They have been in danger. They are pregnant or teen parents. Anything like that. So, one of the qualifiers is that you have failed and repeated a grade, or that you're in danger not to graduate. But that's only one of them. You can't just get into LPOHS on that alone. They also said that LPOHS students at the beginning of the year were, in their words, coerced into signing intent to homeschool forms. And so what they claimed this did was at the end of the year when a kid dropped out or did anything else, the district or the school would just file that intent to homeschool form, date it whenever the kid dropped out, and then say, oh, no, they homeschooled, and that would sort of preserve their graduation rate. Now, as Dr. Meyer said, they would have a 100% graduation rate if that were true.
Mm-hmm.
But it is based on somewhat on practice. So essentially, at the end of the school year, if your student is going to go to a different school or is going to drop out and join the military or is going to homeschool, you do have to sign a form telling the school district this is what they're going to do. But for at-risk youth, a lot of the times if the student doesn't show up for the next year and they're still enrolled and there was no paperwork filed, it's hard for the district to track the family down and to ask them, you know, where did your kid go? Because a lot of times maybe they've moved, maybe something, you know, super serious in their home life has happened. And so what they used to do is at the beginning of the school year when they had the meeting with the parents, they would say, hey, if your child doesn't come to school next year, what are you doing? You know, if it doesn't work out at LPOHS, are you going to homeschool? Are you giving up? Are they getting their GED? And so parents would sign that. And then if the student didn't show up the next year, then and they couldn't contact the family to see where they had gone, then they would file that form that says, well, they told us that they were going to homeschool if they ever left.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a practice that has been approved by the Idaho Department of Education. It makes sense, and it does preserve the graduation rate a little bit because you don't have as many unidentified students.
Mm-hmm.
But because Dr. Meyer admitted that it kind of looks bad, especially if you don't know the ins and outs and you just think, oh, they're having you sign this paper before they've made any decisions, that that looks kind of sketchy, as the kids say. So they have discontinued the practice. And going forward, they're going to try and do a QR code that hopefully more of these parents will actually respond to because you don't have to submit a written form or get an email or anything like that. So yeah, they did address other elements of the grievance, such as the use of funds that were, I don't want to say intended, but they got a grant from the state using the Sandpoint Middle School as sort of a guide with a 10-year plan. And they're using some of those funds to fix up the portables, which the Sandpoint Middle School is using, but then also to transform them into the LPOHS campus. And the coalition had said, you can't do that. That's misappropriation of funds. They reached out to Idaho Department of Education. They said, yes, you can. It's a 10-year plan. Plans change over 10 years. You just have to submit it when you get the money in the beginning. They are just going to submit a new 10-year plan just so everything looks really nice and there's a paper trail. But again, that's going above and beyond.
Well, so a point-by-point response, basically, from Dr. Meyer and addressing the school board there and various school district employees.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody in attendance at all from the opposing, the coalition that filed the grievance?
No one who stood up and no one that I recognized from the previous meeting as representing the coalition. Previously, the person who sort of authored all of the grievance and all of the follow-up documentation was Jackie Braunham, mm-hmm. who is the former West Bonner County superintendent, and she was not in attendance.
Which, to be clear, West Bonner County, that's Priest River. This is not a former superintendent of the Lake Pend Oreille School District.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, had they made any, were you able to get a hold of them for comment?
No, they have not. They said previously that they were going to, if the board went forward with this vote, they were going to begin recall efforts for anyone that voted for it, and they have yet to do that. So it's unclear as of yet, again, because we haven't gotten a hold of them, and they haven't made any public comments, that it's unclear if they're going to try and do the recall, if they have all the facts now and they're kind of, you know, again, saddened that we have to move from the existing campus, but have admitted that this is the only course going forward. We just don't know yet.
Well, okay. Yeah, I mean, that was their kind of stated plan, that coalition was after, it was to move forward with recall efforts if this was the way things went. It sounds like, at least according to Dr. Meyer and in your reporting, that they've been, that the grievance that was filed with the state and also the National Department of Education, it found no wrongdoing on the part of the school board. So
yes,
vindication there.
Everything has been dismissed. Mm-hmm. So at this point, any recall would be based on just on the fact that they don't like the decision.
Right.
Which it hasn't really been getting much publicity. The school district, I don't believe, has released an official number, but I know that two actually bring the existing campus up to snuff would be in the realm of $9 million,
mm-hmm.
which the school district has said generally that, you know, obviously we don't have money, mm-hmm. but we can get a $13 million grant for the schools that have 500 or 1,000 students, but we can't really justify spending $9 million on 51 students.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's all boils down to an adequate funding to keep that school going at this point.
Is this in your view there, Sansaray? Is this kind of the end of the story unless somebody does start mounting a recall campaign? I mean, I see the signs are certainly still out. Mm-hmm. We support LPOHS. In its current location, those are still, I see them all over town, mm-hmm. The yard signs. But is it kind of just now, is the kerfuffle over, you think?
Seemingly, unless they bring some new allegations, they find some new information, or they just decide to go ahead with the recall regardless.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, the vote has been finalized. Everything is moving ahead as planned. And I think hopefully what people realize from all of the information that has come out and from all of the back and forth, that one, it's absolutely reasonable to mourn the loss of this school because they built up an amazing community in their current location. But two, rather than being incredibly incensed and angry at this school district, really, we need to be angry at everybody who votes against levies and also against the Idaho legislature who repeatedly defunds public schooling and seeks to, say, take away property taxes so that we will have nothing to pay our educators or refurbish our buildings with. It's a much larger issue, and we're kind of blaming the representatives, the messengers that are right here, the school district, but it's really not their fault at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Well, they only have so much money that they can work with, and this is they have to pick and choose where things go, and they need to
take care of those kids too, those at-risk kids, mm-hmm. Which I think they're trying to do.
Yeah.
One benefit of having that campus there is they'll have access to the electives.
Mm-hmm.
And with that new CTE center opening up, I would imagine that would provide a lot of new pathways for those kids at the alternative school to access that education more easily.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they can get there, but they have to bus them back and forth.
Yeah.
So that's part of what adds to the expense of maintaining that school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and we're about out of time. In fact, we're way past time.
We are indeed. Yeah. I hope that they can. My opinion here is just that I hope that the contention here between the two sides can be resolved, that there can be some reconciliation. Mm-hmm. Because obviously these are people who care a great deal about the kids who go to that school and should be involved going forward in, you know, in decisions that affect those students' lives. Mm-hmm. And one hopes that it didn't come out so strongly against the school district that now they're just going to be written off and written out of the process altogether. It'll be a tough reconciliation, though. We'll see. There you are. That's my two cents. Hey, the county fair's coming up, and KFY is going to be there. That's news, and that's
how's that going to work, Jack?
That's in the paper. On Monday, I'm going out there with the KRFY crew and setting up
We're going to have a remote broadcast.
Yep.
For the morning show, right?
For the morning show, yep. And for anybody else who wants to, I mean, any of our other shows who want to do it from there.
Yep.
So I think we'll be doing it at noon. We'll be doing kind of an update, a check-in from the fair, and then again at 5 p.m. as we've been doing throughout the summer, having people out there and...
So we will be out there with this show on Friday.
We will. I know. Yeah, we'll have to find a journalist who's willing to join us.
That's willing to come out there, and we can flag down a few passing people or cows.
Yeah. And well, say hello to us, those of you, those fairgoers of you.
Yeah,
out there.
And we're going to have a live mic and be inviting people to do a shout out over the air.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just read in the reader's little blurb about the county fair, you mentioned that we're going to be broadcasting live, announcing competition winners and chatting with fairgoers. Announcing competition winners. I hadn't even thought about that. We've got to start. We're going to have to go and collect all the blue ribbon names and let people know who's on top. I guess so.
You better, because or else I have to issue a correction.
No, yeah, I guess so. Are we gonna? Yeah,
you're now committed, Jack. Mm-hmm.
I guess so. Do you have any interest in the fair there, Sansere? Are you submitting you're a famous gardener? Are you submitting any of your carrots?
Prize winning tomatoes? Do you?
Oh, my best tomatoes have already been eaten, either by me or by the deer.
Yeah. Unfortunately. Uh-huh. That happens. Squirrels seem to be getting in some of mine, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, we'll see you folks at the fair. Sansere, thanks so much for taking quite a bit of time today to talk to us about all this stuff. Chris, thanks again, as always. We'll love, I think, back next week for at least one more before the school year starts.
At the fair.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Better let Will know.
Oh, we better let him know. He's got to don't show up here. Yeah, I'll let him know. But he said he was in for next week, so we'll see him then. And like I said, it's a clear day out there. No smoke in our air right now. So we'll play a little U2 to take off with Otto's Eclectic Mix. Thanks for listening to North Idaho News of the Week.